Chapter 13, Allodia. They stopped at the underground stream to wash off the mud caked to them and their clothes. The water was cold, and the air in the cave kept them shivering, but they wrapped themselves in blankets which had been conveniently stashed nearby and returned to the sleeping area. Hugh said that tomorrow's journey back with a full wagon was going to be exhausting and that they should all go to sleep. Princess was far too excited by what she had seen to be able to sleep, and was about to ask her grandfather for one more story when her mother spoke first. "Actually, Princess, there is one more thing we need to explain to you while we're here," she started, with palpable apprehension. "I'm just not sure where to begin." Princess laughed. "Listen, I can take anything at this point. I've seen the unburied remains of an entire village of people burned alive, a ruined castle, and a secret cave with a treasure room. I've learned that the dragon I feared my whole life is really a king in his army. My understanding of the world has been turned upside down. Nothing you could possibly say would be able to top that." "Perhaps," Orvin replied, "but what your mother is alluding to involves King Osred, the castle, the treasure, Kjolvor's threat, our village, and especially you." "What? Are you going to tell me that I'm King Osred's long-lost daughter and heir to his kingdom?" Princess sarcastically replied. "At this point, I'd almost believe it." "No," Hugh quickly answered. "I assure you that you are our daughter. I watched your mother's belly grow for 9 long months and held you in my arms the day you were born. In fact, you were conceived right over there," he added while pointing towards the far corner of the room. "Hugh!" exclaimed May with dismay. "There was no need to share that." Even in the dim light, Princess could see the fury in her mother's eyes while her grandfather burst out laughing. "So that's where the two of you snuck out to disobey my order," Orvin laughed. "Your mother and I could never figure out where you went, May. We didn't know about the cave back then, but I should have figured it out after you led us here." Hugh was desperately trying to redirect the conversation and said, "So I don't know what Orvin and your mother want to tell you, but there is no doubt that you are definitely our daughter, Princess. It's getting late, though, so say what needs to be said, you two, and let's get to sleep." He crossed his arms and leaned back against the wall with a scowl. May looked at her husband, her daughter, and her father, who silently shrugged his shoulders before beginning her tale. "I guess I should start by telling you a little more about King Osred," she began. "He was a wise and effective ruler, but he could also behave like a cruel and ruthless tyrant." "That he could," agreed Orvin. "He was mean, greedy, and didn't care about anyone other than himself. I told you about how his son, Bjordrik, was a violent bully. Well, Osred had the exact same personality, but shrouded it with self-control, discipline, and decades of military and political experience." "He couldn't have been that bad," objected Princess, but she saw from everyone's expressions that they all thought he was. "As captain of the guard, I knew Osred better than almost anyone, and I hated the man," spat Orvin. "He could have paid Kjolwulf, accepted him as his king, and smoothed things over, but he didn't. He was so prideful and arrogant that he chose to insult a man with 1,000 soldiers a stone's throw away. He decided to doom everyone in his domain rather than apologize for his nasty child's behavior. Let me give you another example of his despicable nature. I told you he remarried in an attempt to sire an alternative heir to Bjordrik, but I didn't share the full story. Osred was our king, and that meant he could do whatever he wanted with his subjects. So he had me send soldiers to all the villages to find candidates to be his wife." Orvin spat again as he said the word candidates. "The instructions he gave were for the candidates to be young, pretty virgins of childbearing age from good breeding stock," he growled. "Every day or two, a soldier would bring a terrified girl and her parents to the castle. Osred would glance at the girl and interview her parents before sending them away. Then one day, one of my men brought in a pretty young girl named Ekwin and her parents. She was only 12 years old, but her mother assured the king that her daughter's cycles had started. Her mother apologized for her daughter's bone-thin, starved appearance, explaining that she had 6 other children and not enough food for everyone. Osred nearly jumped out of his throne with excitement. In his mind, he had found a breeder and didn't care that this child had barely attained puberty. As her king, he could have just taken her, but he wanted his lineage to be proper. So he gave the terrified girl the necklace you admired earlier, proposed to her on the spot, and she accepted. Tears were streaming down her face as she said yes, but she had no choice. A small wedding was held at midday, and by early afternoon her parents were returning to their village with 2 goats and a cow, but no daughter. I don't think Osred ever spoke to Ekwin after that. She was kept in her own quarters, where he briefly visited every night until it was determined she was pregnant a few months later. I would see this poor, miserable girl, who was younger than my little baby, married to a man far older than myself, simply to bear him children. It made my stomach churn. "That's why I forbade the two of you from seeing each other," he said with a stern look towards Hugh and May. "Not that you paid any attention as you snuck down here to your love cave." Princess stifled a laugh at her grandfather's last remark, but then noticed that no one else was smiling. "I think that Tate and I were the only people with whom Ekwin ever spoke," May sadly continued. "We were both pregnant with similar due dates, and Tate was our midwife. Osred made sure that Ekwin was well-fed, and every week she looked stronger and prettier. We'd talk about our babies and what we'd name them if they were boys or if they were girls. Osred was only interested in having a son and had already selected a boy's name. But if it was a girl, Ekwin wanted to name her Elodia. She laughed when I told her I planned to name mine Edlin. She said that we would both have daughters who were princesses." May paused and wiped her tear-filled eye on the blanket. "Ekwin and I became incredibly close, and Tate asked me to be there to help when she went into labor. Osred was eating dinner while Ekwin was giving birth, and insisted on not being disturbed until his heir was delivered. I was Ekwin's only friend and the closest thing to family she had. Ekwin gave birth to a perfect, healthy, beautiful daughter, and we both cried with joy. I remember watching Ekwin hold her baby close to her chest to nurse, whispering her name and telling her how much she was going to be loved forever. But forever lasted less than an hour for Ekwin. She was too young and too frail to bear children. She died holding her newborn daughter to her breast as blood flowed out from between her legs." At this point, May completely broke down sobbing and could not continue. Princess was on the verge of tears herself and wondering why her mother was telling her this woeful tale now. He was holding his trembling wife as her body shook with deep sobs and asked, "Orvin, why are you doing this? I see no reason to put May or Princess through this. What is your point?" "Trust us," Orvin gently replied, "but you are right. May has been through enough. I'll continue the story while she recovers." May looked up at her father and squeezed her husband's hand. "Thanks, Dad. Let's get this finished." Orvin let out a deep sigh and began, "I was with Osred when he heard that his child was born. He was in excellent spirits and asked me to walk with him over to the infirmary after he finished his meal. Ekwin died minutes before we arrived, and Tate was explaining to the king how there was nothing she could do to save her. Osred didn't seem to care and interrupted her to ask about the baby. She told him he had a healthy baby daughter, and he immediately turned away and started to leave. She called after him to ask what to do with the baby since her mother was dead and unable to nurse her. Osred simply flicked a piece of chicken he found caught between his teeth onto the floor and commanded me to kill it." "Those were his exact words," continued Orvin, "and at that moment I loathed my master more than any other person on the planet." Princess felt sick. She thought she was going to throw up. Not only had she learned that the dragon she grew up fearing was really a heartless and vengeful king, she now knew that her own king was petty and cruel. The gleaming alabaster castle of her memories had transformed into a rotting prison run by a tyrannical despot. She now understood the need for this lesson and why it was saved until the end of her education. These ruins might be her birthplace, but she would never again pine for this place as her lost home. It was too stained with evil history.
"So, did you, Grandpa?" Princess asked in a tentative whisper. "Did you kill Ekwin's baby?"
She didn't want to hear his answer, but she had to know whether her grandfather chose to follow his duty or his humanity. "I told Osred that I did," Orvin solemnly answered. "But no, I did not kill Elodia. I would never do something like that, no matter who commanded me."
Princess let out the breath she was holding and asked, "So what happened to her?"
"She lived," May quickly answered. Then she looked at Hugh and softly repeated, "She lived." Princess was confused.
She could tell from her father's reaction that this was the first time he was hearing the story as well. Something was amiss. "I can take it from here," May continued. "Thank you for your help, Dad." She looked at Princess, took a deep breath, and continued, "Tate, Dad, and I took care of little Elodia for a few days until we could figure out what to do with her. I was due to deliver soon, and my breasts were leaking, so I nursed her. Dad told Osred that the baby was gone, and Osred instructed him to bury the queen and her baby somewhere out in the woods beyond the castle walls. Tate made up a story that I needed bed rest and care for the final days of my pregnancy and that I was not to be disturbed."
"I remember that," interjected Hugh. "I was a panicked first-time father and wasn't allowed to see you. Orvin, you assured me that everything was fine, but that Tate wanted to be extra careful. I was so nervous that I couldn't eat for 2 days."
"And everything was okay, son," Orvin reassured him. "We couldn't let anyone know Elodia was alive, or Osred would have killed her and probably us as well."
"So," May loudly interjected as she tried to regain control of her story, "I held and nursed and fell in love with little Elodia over the next 2 days until I went into labor with my own child. I couldn't hold or nurse Elodia past the early stages of my labor, but remember hearing her cries as my contractions increased and worrying about her. Tate reassured me that she would be fine, and then something incredible happened. Elodia stopped crying as soon as I started screaming with my own pain. I immediately panicked that something had happened to her, but Tate checked and told me she was quietly laying there looking in my direction. I knew then that we had a special bond. Shortly after that, I gave birth. I remember the joy of having my own baby placed on my chest and then the terror of realizing that something was wrong. My baby wasn't breathing. At some point, the umbilical cord had wrapped around her neck and she died during delivery. I remember sobbing uncontrollably and clutching her body to mine until somebody pried my hands off her. Then seconds later, Elodia was back in my arms, suckling my teat. I have never needed or loved anyone as much as that baby at that moment. Hugh, you arrived a few minutes later, and I just couldn't bear to tell you the truth when I saw the joy and pride on your face. I'm sorry that I never told you before, but every time you look at our daughter, you still have that same joyous expression. I'm sorry, I'm so very sorry, May sobbed. Hugh drew her close without hesitation and cried with her. Princess didn't know what to do, but knew she couldn't stay there. She took a candle and walked out of the cave. Hugh and May turned to stop her, but Orvin held up his hand. "Leave her be," he cautioned. "She needs some time alone." Princess sat on the little shelf high on the cliff at the cave mouth and stared at the forest across the gorge. She had no idea how long she sat there and little memory of what she thought. Eventually, she heard a scuffling of rocks and saw Orvin climb out to sit beside her. They sat silently for a long time, neither knowing what to say. "So Mom and Dad aren't my parents?" Princess finally asked.
"Nope," Orvin softly answered. "But they're still your mom and dad."
"What does that even mean?" Princess asked.
"That while they neither conceived nor birthed you, they both fell in love with you and raised you as if they had," Orvin answered.
"May and Hugh are the best parents I've ever known."
"Just never tell them I said that," he chuckled.
"I know," Princess replied. "I can't imagine any better parents either. And you better keep that to yourself as well, Grandpa."
Orvin chuckled some more and put his arm around her. "Oh, Princess, I can't begin to imagine what you're feeling. It must seem like nothing you thought you knew is real. I just don't know what to say."
"Oh, you're doing all right," smiled Princess as she nestled in his arms.
"So my name is really Elodia?" she asked.
"Your real name is Princess Elodia," corrected Orvin. "You are the Royal Princess of Fjörgensen. We and everyone in your village are your subjects, and all that treasure you saw today is yours. Of course, you'd be killed if you ever tell anyone, so I'd recommend sticking with the name you've been using your entire life."
"Wow," Princess said with a laugh. "I think you're right. Luckily, I'm good at keeping secrets. But even though I'm Osred's daughter, that treasure is still his. He disappeared the night of the attack. He could still be alive and hiding somewhere."
"Osred is dead,"
Orvin assured her in a stern voice. "But how do you know? Now that I've seen these cliffs, I can believe that he found a way to sneak away," objected Princess.
"I don't want to talk about it," Orvin said firmly. "Just believe me when I tell you that horrid man did not survive the night of Kilworth's attack."
Princess was astounded at Orvin's dismissive statement after all the dark truths he had shared over the past 12 hours, but the stern look on his face and his commanding tone convinced her to drop the topic. "So, even though I've been raised by the sweetest people in the world, I have the blood of a tyrant running through my veins," she sadly stated.
"Princess, you are one of the kindest, sweetest, smartest, and gentlest people I have ever known. I've looked for signs of Osred's influence in you for your entire life, and I assure you that the only things you've inherited from him are his cleverness, his strength, his treasure, and his eternal death curse from Kilwulf. Almost everything else you got from your birth mother or from my side of the family, although don't tell my son-in-law, but I think you inherited your intelligence from him," Orvin said with a smile.
Princess felt her tension flow out of her and cascade into the canyon below as she laughed without restraint.
"So I have a secret princess identity, an alternate name, a hidden fortune, and 2 birthdays. And I'm never going to let you forget that last one," she assured him.
"Let's go back and see how Mom and Dad are doing." They stood up and she whispered,
"I love you, Grandpa."
"I love you too, Princess,"
he replied as his eyes filled with tears. His granddaughter had become a woman today, but she would always be his little girl.